Only 3 full days remain on Michigan's 2016 legislative calendar, and the lame duck legislature has been busy. This week, measures have advanced that would establish a state voter ID law, a plastic bag law, and one that would enable some Michigan employers to receive state revenue directly from their employees. We will explain that. On the other side of the ledger, energy legislation has become bogged down, and other proposals have been abandoned. Here to share his thoughts on this busy week, 69th House District Representative Democrat Sam Singh of East Lansing. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you for having me on the show.
We've spent some time on this program, and you have visited the show in the past to talk about energy legislation, a package of bills that cleared the Senate, now appears to be hung up in the House. Describe what you see happening, Sam.
Well, I think we're getting to the last few days of session, and people want to examine all the last possible ways you can actually do the energy package. I think the Senate did a very good job in a bipartisan way of bringing something over so we could look at. There are probably 2 or 3 areas that are still outstanding for at least House members, both on the Democratic and Republican side. The major issue for House Democrats has been net metering and how we help businesses and farmers and individual homeowners actually utilize solar on their own property and not create additional taxes, as the Senate plan does, that would actually make it cost prohibitive for those people to use solar. And I've been finding a lot of bipartisan consensus. So I think if we can resolve that issue, maybe take a look at some of the choice language that has been put forward so far, I think we can find compromise next week.
Republican State Rep. Gary Glenn told our listeners recently that consumers benefit from the larger choice market. And this choice discussion is really dominating a lot of the discussion here. And he said that the competition, more competition, means electric customers enjoy more choice and pay less. Is there something wrong with that line of reasoning?
Well, if you remember back a decade plus ago in California, where they had the market completely deregulated, you saw things like Enron and rolling blackouts and so forth. And what you want in a state is a level of consistency. You want to know that power is always going to be there and available to you. That's what your businesses want. That's what you expect. And when you go home, that you turn on the lights that they're on. And so that's why you have a regulated system. Now, I'm open to having some level of open choice that allows for that flexibility, but to have a completely deregulated market like Representative Glenn wants, I don't think is realistic and doesn't do the businesses or the individual homeowners any long-term benefit.
I know a lot of Democrats would like to see that renewable portfolio standard go higher as well. Is that a serious sticking point for you?
Well, we obviously earlier in the year talked about trying to get to 20%. The Senate actually only went to 15%, but we saw that as a compromise, and I think that's something that we're willing to support here in the House, as long as we can fix the net metering side of the equation. Now, we also saw some really beneficial things around energy efficiency, helping homeowners and businesses actually reduce their energy costs, so they don't have to buy as much from the utilities, and that was actually some very positive language that came from the Senate. So, listen, we've looked at this issue for close to 20 months. We've had hearing after hearing. We know all the facts. Now the point is we have to actually vote and make this issue completely whole so people know what's going forward. Businesses want that reliability. Individual homeowners want that reliability. And I'm hopeful that we can get to the finish line before the end of the week.
Well, you dovetailed right into my next question. Time is an issue. If it doesn't get passed, it gets relaunched in 2017. Do you have a feeling about what's going to happen here?
Well, that's, I think, what's what I'm concerned about. You've got close to 50 new members coming into the legislature, and to explain to them how energy policy works, it's a very complicated thing. And so if we go into next year, that means we probably don't get anything done next year in 2017, because people are just going to get up to speed on what the policy issues are and all the complexities of that. So really, you're talking kicking the can down, which we've already done to some degree for 4 years, probably down for another 2 to 3 years. And so that's something, again, I don't think homeowners want, businesses want. I think people want some level of reliability. And I think we've got a really good plan that the Senate sent over. We got to make some changes to it. And I think we can get it done next week.
Think you can get it done next week?
I do.
Okay. three full days left. I do have that right, correct?
That's correct. And a lot of things, as you've mentioned earlier in the broadcast, have been taken off the table. You know, the governor for a while was pushing this very, I thought, foolish plan to try to take money out of the school aid fund for IRS tax refunds. That would hit the school aid fund for about $450 million. We already know our schools are struggling. They have high classroom sizes. And to take another $400 million out of that school aid fund, I thought was irresponsible. I'm glad that all the school districts and parents who had called the governor's office and legislators across the state, they heard them loud and clear. I'm glad he's taken that off the table. A number of other big issues, such as, you know, attacking teacher pensions, going after police and fire retirees. Again, the citizens were very good. They were coming out, knocking on our doors at the Capitol. They were calling us at our homes. And again, Democrats were very excited when the Republicans decided not to push those issues forward. So a lot of those issues we would have been grappling with next week. And since we don't have those, I think the last few issues that we have, such as energy and a few other smaller items, we can be able to get done in those 3 days.
Democratic State Rep. Sam Singh of East Lansing is our guest here on Current State. We're talking about everything that's going on at the lame duck, or as much as we have time for here to talk about at the lame duck legislature downtown. The Republican, speaking of things that got shelved, the Republican majority dropped its effort to cut back public pensions and municipal retiree health care benefits back on Tuesday, although one measure involving transparency is apparently still alive. What did you think of shelving that?
Well, we very early on said it did not make sense for us to try to jam something through in 9 days of session where people didn't have a time to look at all the issues, didn't allow for testimony from people from across the state. If you're going to do something this large and this impactful to citizens all across the state, I think it should be done in a thoughtful manner. So when we talk about it next session, which we will, I think we'll have enough time to look at all of the issues and see how we help communities at the same time, how we make sure that we manage the long-term liabilities that the state and local communities have. The one issue that you did mention, a transparency bill, is supported by a bipartisan group of legislators. We want the facts. And so this legislation that hopefully will be finalized and signed by the governor next week or the week after will allow us the opportunity to know all the facts when we get into those discussions in 2017.
Let's still go a little bit deeper on the cuts here, though, because supporters of the measures that were dropped say that the burdens to local governments for paying some of these pension and health care benefits continue to keep municipalities millions and millions of dollars in the red. If cuts aren't on the table, just talk to us generally about how Michigan gets out of this pickle.
Well, sure. I think one of the things you have to take a look at is that the state, for over a decade plus, has actually balanced its budget on the backs of local communities. So $6 billion that should have gone to local communities that would have actually paid for those health care benefits and those pension liabilities have actually been taken from those local governments to balance the state budget. Now, I can understand when you had a recession, as we did in the mid-2000s, that was something that you did. But we've been out of a recession for a number of years. And that's where this governor should have decided to go back and actually fully fund local revenue sharing. And so he's actually compounded the problem. And that's part of why we need to have a long-term conversation, because we have to talk about how we make these communities whole. Because we told them when they were getting cuts in the 2000s that eventually when times got better, they would actually see an increase. They've seen some small increases, but by no means are they getting caught up to the cuts that were made. And so, you know, the governor, when he first came in, made these blanket tax cuts for over $2 billion for businesses. But what he didn't do was help those police and fire pension funds that were happening in those local communities that we had taken from them. And that was something that I thought was a mistake that he made 6 years ago. And in his last 2 years, I'm hoping that he's going to be able to right that ship.
Do you support the transparency piece?
Absolutely. I think anytime we can have more data, as we know what's happening in every community. Now, I can tell you in a lot of communities, we've done a lot of work. I know while I was mayor in East Lansing on the city council, now it's been almost a decade ago, we were looking at those issues. We made changes to our healthcare system. We made changes to our pension system that has actually helped us long term. Now, I know there's been some financial difficulties in the years, you know, after I left because of some of the additional cuts that this administration has made on those local communities and not keeping revenue sharing at the levels that they should. So I know they're probably struggling a little more now than in 2006 and 7 when I was there. But we made some of those changes. And that's the type of thing that I think legislature needs to know. What are all the things that were happening in the local community? How do we help them? But we do have to manage that issue because it is a liability and it's something we have to take seriously. And as Democrats, we do. But I think we have to look at the whole picture, revenue as well as cuts.
You were in the minority back on Wednesday when the House passed a voter ID measure. Under this measure, voters without photo ID could still cast a provisional ballot, but they'd have to visit their clerk's office within 10 days with a photo ID for their vote to count. Why did you oppose that?
Well, we already have a voter law that requires ID at the time you vote, when you show up to your polling place. And if somehow you forgot that ID or you lost it the day before or something like that, you're actually able to sign an affidavit because you are already registered to vote. You already had to show ID to be registered. Why do you have to show it a second time? And so what happened across the state on Election Day is 18,000 people signed an affidavit. And that meant they went in, they said, this is who I am. They got their ballot. They actually voted. That's how we've been doing it for a decade plus. We've had no single instances that the Secretary of State could find of voter fraud. And so the question is, why do you want to take these 18,000 people who signed an affidavit and said, this is who I am, and say now you get a provisional ballot? And what a provisional ballot means, it doesn't get counted that day. It gets counted maybe in 10 days, maybe a week even after that, only if there's a tie or something very close to a tie or a recount. So what you're doing to those 18,000 people, oftentimes they're senior citizens, oftentimes they're handicapped and so forth. You're telling those people your vote doesn't count today. It might count in 10 days. When we've had a system that shows ID and when you forget it, you have to sign an affidavit. That has worked perfectly for over a decade plus, and there's not been a single instance of fraud. So why are they doing that? I think they want to disenfranchise those 18,000 people. They want to disenfranchise people of color, people in urban communities, senior citizens that don't have driver's licenses. And that's what happened this week. It was a shame that they did it. Obviously, you saw these types of laws in North Carolina and other states to be taken up by the courts. I now know that this will be a lawsuit waiting to happen next year. And I think it's a shame because, again, the Secretary of State, the Republican Secretary of State, said there was no instances of fraud at all. So my question is, why do you even have to make those changes?
There was a measure passed by the Senate last week, which I want to ask you about. Part of this proposal, if I understand it correctly, would enable some number of Michigan companies who are receiving state tax incentives to receive money straight from their employees. I'm going to take the liberty to quote Nancy Kaffer of the Detroit Free Press. Quote, this legislation would allow a business that creates jobs to keep the taxes it withholds from employees' paychecks. The taxes employees pay to fund government services like roads, schools, public safety, and social services would be diverted directly into their employer's pocket. Unquote. Is she describing that accurately? Is this on your radar?
So, one, it is no longer on our radar. The Speaker of the House said that we will not be taking these bills up this session, so it'll be taken off of our legislative agenda for this session. If it comes back up, we'll have to address the issue. But this goes back to the question of how do you provide incentives for businesses? The governor, when he first came in, decided to give a blanket $2 billion tax cut to businesses. We did not get a guarantee from any of those businesses that you're actually creating a job. So a lot of law firms, a lot of accounting firms, lobbying firms, all these kind of companies that don't necessarily create jobs because they got a tax cut, guess what? They got a tax cut, $2 billion worth, all across the board. And so we never saw the number of new jobs that the governor had promised 6 years ago. You've never seen that happen. That's why you're seeing now businesses coming forward and saying, we need a new incentive plan. And so this incentive plan basically, instead of giving the money after the job was created, or in some instances, what the governor's doing now is giving them money up front and saying, we hope you get this job created. What they're saying is, once you got that job created, we're going to take that taxes that we were going to send to the state, we're going to keep it instead of sending it to the state and then we sending it back as a tax credit.
Eliminating a middleman.
It
does. Is that the theory?
That's the theory there. And so I think it's a legitimate debate that should happen. I do think it was probably portrayed being a lot more dramatic than it was, because in some instances, what we're doing right now for tax credit for businesses is that they pay those taxes and then we send that tax money back to them once we can verify those jobs have been created. And so I do understand where some of the reporters came from and a number of progressive organizations as well as conservative organizations about that. But to me, I think we have to have a conversation on how we incentivize not only businesses, but more specifically businesses in urban areas. Because what we see, it's very hard to redevelop downtown Detroit. It's hard to develop a downtown Lansing when you have old infrastructure that needs to be rebuilt. And that's where I'm okay of having some kind of incentive, where we're helping a core urban community deal with some of the unique natures of their land and their property. Whereas, it's very easy to go out into a township where there's been nothing built and build a brand new building. That's easy for a developer to do. But to take something where that might have environmental damage, that might have a building that has to be renovated, that takes sometimes additional resources. And that's where I think having tax incentives makes sense. But to give these blanket tax cuts where we don't see any job creation, that to me is, I think, foolish. And that's something I don't support.
We have less than a minute, but I want to ask you about your new role in 2017. I'm sure you've given a lot of thought to what kind of minority leader you want to be next year. How do you intend to approach that role?
Well, I was very honored that my colleagues chose me to be the leader for the next session. I'm going to focus on the economy because I have heard all across the state as I traveled over the last few months that people are feeling that the economy is not working for them. Even though we have seen ourselves out of the recession, they don't feel that they've been out of the recession. So you're going to see coming from Democrats policies focused on education funding, on higher education funding, worker retraining, making sure that we're making an effort to help those that are trying to get into the middle class, those that are trying to make ends meet. We want to be able to be their voice in the state capitol next session.
We want to thank Sam Singh, Democrat of East Lansing and state rep representing the 69th House District, for making it by today. Happy holidays, Sam. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.